Hello and welcome back to another episode of Chatting Like Champions. Today, I'm joined by my ever-present co-pilot, Pavan. How are you doing, Pavan?
All good. Got some, more round of 16 action to cover tonight.
Yeah, and we've also got the URM veteran.
Hello,
mate. How are you, Reese?
I'm very good, thank you. Happy to be on. Joining the likes of the great Alex Duke and Steve Crossman as guests on the pod.
So, it's quite a guest happy. List.
Yeah.
So today, unfortunately, we had the very sad news come out that Alisson's dad, the Liverpool goalkeeper, has tragically drowned near his holiday home in Brazil. So our condolences and thoughts are with the family at this time. And obviously with the player as well. This week is a week that has seen records broken and a lot of exciting football played. And we are one step closer to knowing who will be in the quarterfinals of this season's Champions League.
This is your pilot speaking. It's Pavan here. I was going to roll the name Pavan the Pilot, but I thought that's a little bit tacky, so I've left that behind. Anyway, it's Suitcase of a Superstar, numero tres. And your first clue is this player scored 54 goals in 139 appearances for Lazio. Yeah, so we'll take us into the Lazio buy-in game. So this was an extremely momentous occasion for the Eagles as they competed in a Champions League knockout game for the first time since the 1999-2000 season. And to put that into perspective, Simone Inzaghi was lining up front 21 years ago. And on Tuesday night, he was stood on the touchline as their manager. So, you know, it tells you the time period and how much Lazio fans have been waiting to compete on the big stage. However, it seems the nerves really got to the home dressing room as in 10 minutes, Masaccio underhit a back pass back to his keeper, Pepe Reina, which obviously Lewandowski pounced on, giving Bayern the lead within the first 10 minutes. And this was the Polish striker's 72nd Champions League goal, which saw him overtake Raul in third place for all-time scorers in the competition's history, which is, pretty good. So Lazio, they really failed to respond for the rest of the game, carried on in the same kind of passive, nervous manner. But at 1-0, Milinkovic-Savic did have a bit of a dribble into the Bayern area, and he kind of tripped over Jerome Boateng's trailing leg. Now, after a VAR check, nothing was given, and the ref, didn't think anything should be given either. But I've looked at it back, and I'm thinking, we obviously had this discussion on last week's podcast about accidental contact with what happened in the Barca game, what happened in the Porto Juventus game with Ronaldo, and now we've got another one, and I think we've got another one later coming up. Reese, I guess I'll come to you first. I mean, most people would call that a modern day penalty now. And I'd see that as Savic has kind of dinked the ball past Boateng and Boateng's foot, he's kind of left his foot out. And I think there is actually a little bit of intent in that. So I think that's, slightly harsh for Lazio.
Very unlucky, obviously. They did obviously say shoot themselves in the foot by Masaccio's awful back pass, which Lewandowski was never going to miss that chance. And then, but they could have almost got back into it. And on another day, another referee, they could have been back in the game. Even though I'm a defender and I'd normally be like, oh, that's soft, but I'd probably say that was a penalty as well. But in terms of the VAR, VAR's there for sort of clear and obvious errors. And I suppose you could say that wasn't a clear and obvious error by the referee. So in a way, I sort of rate that VAR didn't get involved, if that makes sense. I feel like VAR's much better used in Europe than it is in the Premier League. But, you could do a whole other podcast on that. But, harsh on Milinkovic-Savic, who's obviously the heartbeat of that Lazio team in some ways, creatively, a brilliant player. But unfortunate, but it's how you respond to that. And Spoilers, they didn't respond very well.
Yeah, exactly. As we'll see the upcoming goals. I mean, Kieran, your thoughts on the pen incident?
I thought that it was a penalty looking at it personally, but it, as Reece said, it was a soft one. There's another VAR incident coming up in one of the next few games that we're going to be speaking about. And this is always going to be a very highly debated topic just because it is so controversially used in certain parts, and the rules across the leagues don't seem to be consistent. It's a bit of a mess.
I think it is a pen as well, but you know, it's as Reece said, it's how you respond, and they didn't respond. I mean, I think the only thing we can say is obviously Lazio's holding midfielder that game was Lucas Leiva, and you know what he's best well known for is not for his on-pitch performances for Liverpool. It's, you know, that clip. So I think the only way we can describe that penalty incident is it was just unlucky for Lazio. I'll move on to the next point. And Jamal Musiala was given the starting spot in the number 10 role with the veteran Thomas Muller absent. And the youngsters seamlessly slotted into that team and picked up the ball in the centre of the pitch and drove a very powerful low shot into the corner past Pepe Reina. And that goal saw him become the youngest Englishman to score in the Champions League, except for the fact that he's now declared for Germany, a couple of days later, but we'll get into that in a second. I mean, obviously I read that he played a lot of youth games for England. And I think he's only appeared twice in youth for Germany. But it seems like Joachim Löw's had a call with him and said, basically, you know, I'd like to call you up. I think it's in March, the next international break is. And he seemingly accepted that. The Athletic did an interview with him, and they said that obviously he'd like to have played alongside his friends, but he just felt this kind of, not calling, but I guess we could call it a calling to, you know, go and play for his birth country at least. I mean, Reece, obviously England are blessed with central attacking midfielders. I don't know how we're going to get them all in come the Euros, but you know, do you think this is the right decision from his part? And you know, what kind of level do you think he can reach?
Yeah, I think for practical reasons, probably a good decision. I don't know. I'm sort of comparing it to, you know, like when a player sort of knows he's not good enough to play for England, so he sort of plays for Ireland or something. You know, maybe his ambitions aren't quite as high as we'd like them to be, but no. In all seriousness, probably a good move at the moment. Obviously, Germany, national team wise, are going for a bit of a rebuild, aren't they? Obviously, they had that recent 6-0 hammering by Spain, didn't they? So they're, and obviously at the last World Cup, obviously just a disaster for them. So they're going for a bit of a period of rebuilding, and yeah, the fact that you know Joachim Löw was straight on the phone to him, wanting him to get involved, making him feel wanted, you know, especially when he's not even 18 yet, the national team's main manager, you know, not like the under 21s, like the actual manager for the men's team is calling you up. That, you know, how can you say no to that? So I don't blame him one bit. And, you know, I feel like he feels like he can be part of something there, part of that rebuild. And in terms of his goal as well, he took that so well, took it like a veteran. What a strike as well. And, you know, I'm slightly jealous that Germany have managed to acquire his services because he took that goal so well, so well. And yeah, definitely jealous of them. And yeah, definitely jealous of the fact that he's you know, not even 18, he's scoring the Champions League. I don't know what I was doing when I was just about to turn 18, probably at sixth form or something. But not as exciting, let's just say that. So what a player that Germany have managed to nab from us, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, he's our age and it's, you know, he's scoring goals in the Champions League for the biggest club in Germany. It's pretty crazy. I mean, Kieran, I guess, you know, Reece summed it up quite well there. But in terms of obviously Müller's age, it seems like he's, you know, playing season on season and never seems to be deteriorating. But, you know, there will be a stage when they're going to have to find an heir to that, you know, central attacking midfield role. And do you think Musiala can basically fill that void, which means they won't have to go and buy somebody?
Yeah, Müller really feels like he's been around forever. I can't remember when he wasn't playing. So I don't know how many years he's actually been playing for, but he really has been a key figure in both Bayern and Germany's squads. And he, in my opinion, he's a really underrated player, Müller. I think he's actually a lot better than people give him credit for. But he's obviously Musiala's got, he's at Bayern. He's got Müller to learn off of. So what's to stop him being as good as Müller at that point? Mm. He's proven with that goal that he can finish. He looked very lively throughout the game, and he looks to be one of those more like tricky players that kind of find space out of nowhere and pop up, and as he did there, just get a goal. It was a really well taken finish. I think he could definitely do well for Germany. I think on his behalf, the move probably to play for Germany was probably better, because Southgate seems to be favouring players that he's already called up. Obviously, we'll find out in this next international break whether he's going to mix that up a little bit. But I didn't see him getting into the England squad when we have the likes of Foden here, call up Mount, obviously. We got Grealish. He's going to favour players that play in England, I feel, because he said that the English top flight is like the pinnacle of competitions outside of the major European ones, obviously. So I think it's definitely a good move on his behalf, and we could one day regret the decision not to get him. Yeah. And I can see, like, in a few years' time, he pops up, scores a winner against us in like a World Cup. Probably it's going to happen because he's a German national. But oh well, I guess only time will tell.
Yeah, absolutely. You can just see the day when we come up against Germany and, I don't know, Foden's injured or something and he goes and bangs one in. But yeah, it depends on, you know, if this next generation of, in 5 years' time, let's say, and Foden's like our only attacking midfielder, we might regret that. But anyway, it is his birthday on Friday and we are recording this on Thursday. So when you hear this, it'll probably be his birthday. So yeah, happy birthday to him. And, you know, big things ahead for that. For that young man. I don't know why I said young man, because, you know, he's our age. But anyway, you know, good luck to him in his future endeavours. I mean, you know, carrying on with the game, either side of half-time, Leroy Sané, the summer signing, was terrorising Lazio defenders, scored a tap-in and fizzed in a cross that basically hit a Serbi, which made it 4-0. Joaquin Correa did pull a consolation back before the clock hit 15 minutes, but the damage was done. And I think we all agree that Bayern should see this through come the second leg. Your second clue is they collected 307 Bundesliga appearances, scoring 121 goals and won two German league titles.
Right, so moving on to the second game that we're covering. It is the Atletico-Chelsea game that took place in Bucharest. It was Chelsea that emerged victorious in a game which on paper looked to be very closely contested. Obviously, Atletico was forced to play their home tie over 3,000 kilometres from their actual home grounds due to COVID restrictions. Olivier Giroud, who else, popped up and decided to score an overhead kick in this game to put Chelsea ahead in the 68th minute. And Atletico really struggled to gain a foothold in the game. Honestly, with the goals that Giroud has scored, you could convince someone that doesn't know anything about football that he is one of the great all-time greats, to be honest. Some of the goals he has scored is completely ridiculous. But Simeone seems to have got the tactics wrong in this game, to be honest. Atletico didn't really look very threatening apart from a few brief moments in the opening 20 minutes. Obviously, Mendy made a mistake in goal, which I think it was João Felix nearly pounced on, but it never came to be. They only had six shots with zero on target, and they gave up large amounts of possession for their obviously compact defensive approach to the game. So, Rhys, how do you see Simeone responding now that his team are going into the second leg a goal behind? Surely they can't just sit back and hope to hit Chelsea on the break anymore.
Yeah, I never know what to expect with never know what to expect from Atletico in the Champions League. I remember Liverpool either drawing or winning away there last season, and then you know Atletico went to score three at Anfield and excuse me and knocked them out, which was absolutely mental. So yeah, I'm not going to expect Chelsea to have an easy second leg. And yeah, on the Giroud thing as well, like I don't even think that's in his top five career goals, that overhead kick, even though it's amazing. Yeah, just what a goal it was. And it, you know, he's just evergreen as well. We're talking about Thomas Müller being evergreen. Giroud's 34 now and he's, you know, still performing. And yeah, being an Arsenal fan like Pavan, I was sad when we sold him. But oh, Giroud. And yeah, Atletico, like you say, very disappointing as well. That Mendy mistake, you know, sort of came to nothing. He was sort of lucky not to make any contact. And I think there was like a Suarez low cross that nobody was really gambling on. And that was about it as far as Atletico's chances went.
Lamar got on the end of that and didn't get anything major on it and just kind of kicked it out of play. How do you think that Simeone are going to set up Atletico going into the next leg then, Pavan?
Well, you know, as Reece said, you don't really know what to expect, but I think this Atletico team are a lot more unpredictable than, you know, than they have been in past seasons. You know, as a star could just be born, as Marcus Llorente was at Anfield last season. So I think Chelsea have got to be very careful. The thing is with Chelsea, they don't seem to be scoring a lot. So, you know, if Atletico bag an away goal, I think it puts the tie, you know, for a very exciting finish. So, yeah, I think Chelsea have either got to find, you know, their shooting boots and make sure they score, you know, at least one or two at home. If it is at home, obviously, we it seems to be with the, you know, lowering of restrictions now. But yeah, trying to defend against Atletico, they're just so unpredictable. They might just, you know, you might see João Felix have an absolute stellar of a game. But yeah, very interesting second leg coming up.
As Chelsea's goal was scored by Giroud, the linesman instantly raised his flag for offside. And there was what seemed to be a lengthy VAR check, which occurred after it, which eventually ruled it onside as the ball deflected off of Mario Hermoso rather than Mason Mount. Now, that check actually only lasted 3 minutes, but it felt so much longer. Obviously, as we've mentioned before, the subject of how VAR is used has been debated since it's been introduced. And obviously this call was a correct one, but Reece, how do you feel we can avoid interrupting the flow of the game when using VAR and possibly speed up the process?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because, you know, it ultimately reversed an incorrect decision and you can't really blame the linesman for getting it wrong because, you know, it was obviously so hard to see that it was in fact onside, you know, kicked by an Atletico player rather than a Chelsea player into Giroud's path. And, you know, we're so glad that it got ruled onside because what an amazing goal it was. But, yeah, I think it's sort of more sort of forgivable now when there aren't sort of fans there. But, you know, when there's fans there and they've got to sit there for, you know, 3 minutes and, like you say, it feels like half an hour, I'm not sure that's going to quite be acceptable, you know. You know, most Chelsea fans have to wait that long to sort of get to celebrate their team score or not. You know, it's a bit ridiculous. So it's a tough one. Maybe more camera angles. It's so tough, isn't it? It's such a tough one for VAR. But, you know, imagine if it took all that time and then they were wrong or they took a bit less time and got it wrong. You know, it's a real tough issue. But I feel like at least whilst there's not fans there, you can sort of get away with taking a bit longer just to make sure you've got the right decision. But it must have been a painful wait for the Chelsea fans watching at home on the telly to see if that Giroud goal was going to be given or not. But real tough one.
It definitely must have been a tense few moments there. Pavan, have you got any thoughts on how VAR could possibly be sped, the process could be sped up, or it could be better for viewers of the game?
Well, I think obviously, you know, what Reece is saying about the fans is pretty nailed on. But obviously, when there's not fans there, when you're watching a Premier League game, they do that. You see kind of the lines being drawn or a VAR screen come up and you have these three separate screens, you know, with one showing a replay and the other one showing the ref. And I don't know why, but when we get to the Champions League, they just don't provide that for the viewer. And I think, you know, when there's no fans there, at least show some, you know, replay, or because I think BT had to show their own replay because, you know, the actual UEFA haven't got that in. So I think that really made it feel slow. But yeah, it's an ever-going problem. And I guess we're getting to VAR territory. Will probably come back in the next episode and the one after that. So yeah, I guess we've just got to strap ourselves in, haven't we? Your third clue is that they are currently a first-team assistant coach at FC Bayern München after retiring in 2014. So we've got Atalanta versus Real Madrid, which wasn't as eventful as, you know, some of the other games. Only finished 1-0 to Real Madrid. But going into this fixture, Zinedine Zidane was without lots and lots of his key men, with the following senior players ruled out: Sergio Ramos, Karim Benzema, Eden Hazard, as always, Valverde, Carvajal, Marcelo, Militao and Rodrigo were all out for this game. So, you know, it really was needs must for Zidane. After what was probably Real Madrid's best passage of play, Ferland Mendy found himself charging towards the edge of the box. It looked to be through on goal until Freuler brought him down on the edge of the box. Now, the ref showed absolutely no hesitation and sent off the Swiss international. But, you know, many who have watched it back thinking there is technically a covering defender. Now, he is kind of the other half, on the other half of the pitch, but he is behind the action, or he's facing the action at least. So that would deem there is a covering defender by law. So it wouldn't be a last man challenge. Therefore, it wouldn't be a red card. But many are saying, you know, the refs kind of got that one wrong. And I know we've just talked about VAR and refs, but this one seemed like a very solid call from the referee himself rather than a VAR problem. I mean, Reece, do you think that was another harsh decision on another Italian side?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Not a red card for me. I feel like, you know, he's a pacey customer, is Mendy. We'll give him that. But I feel like the angle that he sort of closes in at on goal, and the sort of angle of the covering defender and sort of how central he is to the goal, I feel like he is definitely a covering defender for me. And it was just the fact that the referee seemed to not even take a moment to ponder or, you know, consider the ramifications of his decision. He made his mind up instantly, sent off the man, and it, you know, obviously completely changed the game. You know, I want to quote Garth Crooks saying he's ruining great games, but that's all what happened, because, you know, we were looking forward to seeing Atalanta's attack. It, you know, they're very free flowing going forward, but obviously had to completely switch up their game plan following the red card, as you would, you know, against you know, when you're a man down to Real Madrid, even with their absentees. And yeah, harsh decision, completely changed the game, and could overall change the tie, but I guess only time will tell for that last point.
Yeah, I mean, Kieran, obviously, I think the commentator said it would be interesting if he'd actually been taken down in the box, because there is kind of confusion over this double jeopardy law. And if he'd brought him down in the box, I don't think by law he would have actually got a red card. But because he brought him down on the edge of the box, he got a red card. So, you know, the laws are kind of all over the place. But yeah, what did you think about this incident?
I think the laws definitely need to be shored up, because it's getting to the point where they kind of contradict each other and they don't make sense, because how can the same foul outside of a box be a red, but the one inside the box not be a red? That doesn't make sense in my head. But obviously Mendy, as Reece said, is a very pacey player and he's always going to try and beat a man for pace. But I don't know. I don't think it was. I don't think it was a red card at all. And it was definitely, and it definitely changed the complexion of the game after that, because Real Madrid just looked a lot more confident, looked a lot more on top of play. And ultimately, it really could cost Atalanta the tie here. But I guess only time to tell with that. Obviously, it'd be Atalanta playing away next, so they're going to need to get two goals to progress because away goals law. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Gasperini's men were a man down, unable to showcase their attacking brilliance. But, I mean, to their credit, they defended so admirably, and Real were far too passive in their play, unable to break them down. Lots of, you know, last-ditch challenges from the Atalanta defenders. I think Gasperini lost... I think he lost Zapata to injury. He took Muriel off for Ilicic, and then Ilicic actually got, you know, the sub got subbed. So he kind of lost his best three attacking players anyway, just already being down to 10 men. And, you know, just as it looked like all that hard work was going to pay off, Ferland Mendy whipped in a peach of a strike on his weaker right foot in the 86th minute after it was worked to him from a short corner. I mean, you know, that's a proper sucker punch for Atalanta. I really felt for them there. You know, I think a lot of people are rooting for Atalanta just because of the way they play and, you know, the connection they've got to their fans. I mean, we obviously know that Steve Crossman has a soft spot for Atalanta because Martin Deroon, who spent a season at Middlesbrough, is, you know, playing in the Atalanta midfield for them. I mean, this game is still finely poised, and I think Atalanta are definitely not the kind of team to be intimidated by anybody, despite going to the Bernabeu next. And obviously, with their desire to score goals, they're a bit like the Leeds, the Italian version of Leeds. They just keep attacking, and it's relentless, really. I mean, Rhys, do we think Los Blancos will confirm their place in the quarters, or Atalanta, are they going to get their revenge?
You know, I fancy them to score at least one at the Bernabeu, to be fair. Yeah. And let's not forget that Real Madrid have lost, well, it was at their sort of training ground stadium, the Alfredo Di Stefano stadium. They did lose there to Shakhtar in the group stage. So they're not, you know, they're not exactly indestructible this season in the Champions League. And obviously aren't having a great time on or off the pitch generally. So Atalanta could play on that in the second leg with 11 men, hopefully with some attackers back, and could pose a threat. But yeah, no, you're right. Real Madrid, you know, for the extra man advantage, didn't really work anything, and sort of had to rely on an absolute, well, not thunderbolt, but, you know, an absolute perler from Ferland Mendy. So it wasn't like they sort of managed to work it into the box and take advantage of the extra man that way. They sort of had to rely on a sort of, you know, one of those miracle strikes, if you like. And what a goal it was, by the way. But it took them until the 86th minute, scoring against a team that, you know, were down to 10 very early on. Poor from them. I know they won, but that's poor from them. You know, a team of their stature and reputation. So I reckon Atalanta can still definitely do some harm. This tie is far from over, in my opinion.
Yeah, Kieran, obviously, you know, Real Madrid are, I think they're looking to have Ramos and Hazard back for the second leg. So do you think that's going to make a difference?
I'm not too sure, to be honest. Obviously, Ramos is such a key player for them. He always has been, especially in the Champions League. So I feel like he could definitely pick them up a bit more and possibly get them going, because he's such a great leader on the pitch for him. But Atalanta are definitely a team with a lot of spirit, and they're going to give it their all until the final whistle of the next game. So it's definitely far from over. I liked that comparison of the Italian Leeds. We had the Spanish Norwich last episode. Yes, now we have the Italian Leeds. But it's a good comparison, actually. They both play quite similar styles of football, very attacking, but it does leave them defensively quite questionable sometimes. So we'll just see if Real Madrid can exploit that weakness in their game. But it's definitely going to be an exciting game coming up.
Your fourth clue is He is Germany's top scorer of all time with 71 golassos.
So moving on to the final game that was played out this week, Mönchengladbach faced off against City, in which City emerged victorious in a game where they were expected to dominate. City have now made it 19 straight wins, and they really faced no threat from Borussia Mönchengladbach as they sealed them out for large periods of the game. Obviously, Bernardo Silva opened the scoring with a header after a beautifully floated ball by Cancelo set him up perfectly. Alessane Plié caused Edison a bit of worry down City's end not long after that with a close flick. But other than that, it was all going City's way. Gabriel Jesus doubled their lead in the 65th minute with a close range finish, but Cancelo was really the one that was responsible for creating that move as well. It was a real masterclass from him. Obviously, he crossed the ball into Bernardo Silva, who headed it down to the path of Jesus, who fired home. City obviously looked to be in a very strong position to win the Premier League again. But it's the Champions League really is that trophy that's eluded Pep in his time at City. Rhys, is this the season where he finally gets his hands on the Champions League trophy, or is it too early to tell? Obviously, they're yet to come up against a real big team this season as such, so they haven't been tested too much. But do you see the City squad going all the way?
The way they're playing at the moment, like you say, 19 straight wins. Who's to say they can't? You know, they've been unlucky in previous seasons. The quarterfinal against Spurs comes to mind in that sense. And yeah, I suppose since, I don't think Pep's won it since he was at Barcelona, if I'm correct. He never managed it with Bayern as well. So yeah, it's sort of his personal, you know, mission to try and get that back is, you know, he's obviously heralded as a brilliant manager. You know, there's no denying that. But it's that, well, but you haven't won the Champions League since, I think it was like 2011. Or I think that's right. So like 10 years, you know. So that's going to be the big one for him. And the way he's got this City team playing at the moment is just unbelievable. And I think, you know, they're very likely to get through the round of 16. So assuming they do, you know, in the quarterfinals, by the time the quarterfinals roll around, they could be well clear in the Premier League and able to really concentrate their efforts more on the Champions League as well, which other clubs, maybe except Bayern, might not have the luxury of doing. And obviously PSG, but we'll see how they get on. So who's to say they can't do it this year? I think there's every chance. I think they're playing the best football in Europe. They're in the best form in Europe. Well, 19 straight wins. So obviously, they're in the best form in Europe. I don't see why they can't continue that. Cancelo's really come good for them as well. I remember when he first joined, you couldn't get in the team ahead of Kyle Walker, and now he's been absolutely unbelievable this season. Those two crosses, as you say, basically responsible for both goals. And it shows if you can whip in a really good ball, you don't have to be tall, didn't mean to rhyme there, to head home, you know. The first goal obviously followed City's last goal in all competitions, which is against Arsenal, where Raheem Sterling, who's not the tallest, scored a header in the 6-yard box. And similarly, Bernardo Silva, not the tallest bloke either, heads home. So it's just that pinpoint crossing that City have. Just ridiculous. And then, you know, goes and proves that it wasn't by accident or wasn't luck, because he picks up Bernardo Silva again, whose header creates mayhem for Gabriel Jesus to double the lead. And I think the only disappointment for City is that they didn't score more, to be honest. Very good night for them.
Yeah, Pavan, would you put this City squad in the same bracket that maybe Bayern was last season? Obviously, they're being very dominant in all competitions, and they're really showing how deep their squad is at the moment as well. So would you say they're up at that level yet?
I say they've definitely got the potential to do that, but you know, winning a sextuple, as it's called, that, you know, Bayern won is no easy feat. So I think you know, that would mean City have got to win the Carabao Cup, which hopefully they do, so Spurs don't win it. They've got to win the FA Cup, and then, you know, look set to win the Prem. But I don't know, every season it just seems to be this will be City's year. And, you know, it does look like it'll be their year this year, but sometimes Pep just overthinks it and gets too excited. So I'm not getting carried away yet. I think they've definitely got the potential, but as you said, I'd like to see them get a really big test, like a Bayern or a PSG in the next round or the round after that, to really show if Pep's come over this obsession and this problem he's had with the Champions League so far.
Reece touched on my next question quite a bit in his answer, actually. I was going to talk about João Cancelo. Obviously, he's really made that left-back spot his own this season. As you said, it took him a while to get running, but he looks to be really, really good this season. Would you put him in that bracket of like the world-class left-backs, including players like Robertson and Alphonso Davies?
Yeah, why not? I think he's been at Juventus previously, so he's no stranger to playing for big clubs with big expectations and delivering. And, you know, he's come to City, who maybe not the biggest club, but they've definitely had the biggest success in England over the last decade. And there's a lot of expectation there still with him at City. And he's really living up to that this season. He's been, you know, one of the most important players on their merry little jog to the title, if you like. They're having a great time in the league. And he's been a big part of that. And showing that he's a big part of their Champions League effort as well, with, you know, an assist and a pre-assist, if you like, but a key pass for the second as well. So if you can keep playing like that, then I'd definitely say he's up in the very upper echelons of fullbacks in world football right now.
Pavan, you saw him throughout the game take up positions in the centre of the pitch as well. Obviously, he took that long range shot that went just over the bar. Do you think that Pep has started to utilise his fullbacks more going forward than he had previously?
Possibly, but I think it's always been pretty well documented that Pep likes his fullbacks to basically become inverted midfielders as such. But I think the players he's had, like Kyle Walker, you know, has more wanted to just kind of stick himself to the byline and basically sprint up and down. Whereas I think Cancelo's skill set basically is perfect for the inside midfielder, and he's taking up positions free. He's always the free man on the like opposition press. I mean, no, Arteta tried to play Saka basically on a man mark job for Cancelo on the weekend. And, you know, people just are struggling to live with him at the moment. So, yeah, I think it's another... You know, everyone talks about the modern fullback. I think a modern fullback can do anything or everything they want to do at the moment. It's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time for City fans going forward. And it'd be interesting to see how far Pep can take them this season.
And your fifth and final clue is that they hold the record for most goals scored at a World Cup, which was broken in 2014 when Germany were victorious. Reece, you got any ideas?
Yeah. I think I had it figured out after the first clue, saying that he played for Napoli, and Lazio. I thought
Lazio. Me.
Sorry, I meant Lazio. I think, and I was like, oh. And it was like a modest amount of goals, isn't it? But it wasn't too many because he's always been sort of better in international football. And I thought, am I allowed to say?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, I thought, Miroslav closer. And then as the clues have gone on, I've been like, this is definitely closer.
Yeah.
What a player.
Yeah, clues-wise, what were we saying? Good this week?
Yeah, definitely good clues. I had an idea of who it was in the first clue, just because there's not been too many... huge players like that that have played for Lazio, really. He's been probably their most successful player. But it was a good player to do, actually.
I kind of picked him because he's topical, because obviously he was sat in the stands for the Lazio Bayern game. And I just thought, yeah, that's quite a interesting player. He's known for his international goals. So, yeah, big brain plays.
Also famously at Lazio, didn't he? He sort of got awarded a penalty or scored a goal or something that was handball, and then he told the ref that, he'd sort of cheated to get it and got the ref to reverse the decision. So, what a great guy.
Okay, so that brings this week's episode of Chatting Like Champions to an end. Big thanks to Reese for coming on.
No worries, boys.
And obviously, we will be back next... We'll be back next with a special project that me and Pavan have been working on. More will be revealed on our social media channels, which you can find at ChampionsURN on Twitter and Instagram. We upload on there quite regularly, and any news that we have, you can find on there. We have also recently just launched our Spotify channels and other streaming services as well, our own pages, which you can find on all major streaming services. And as always, keep it URN and stay safe.